You are now listening to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast with Dr. Taylor Crick. Dr. Taylor is an expert in helping those suffering with autoimmune disease, and he himself has autoimmune disease. Autoimmunity is rampant today, and the purpose of this podcast is to educate about the underlying causes and natural solutions to halt autoimmune disease progression. This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. For more information from Dr. Taylor, visit www.autoimmunedocpodcast.com. Without further ado, here is your host, Dr. Taylor Crick.
All right, welcome to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast. As always, this is your host, Dr. Taylor Crick, and I love breaking down the mechanisms behind chronic and complex conditions. You know, before I just get into it today, just give us a follow on YouTube, give us a follow on Instagram, and just kind of all those things, I would say, because I don't know how today's episode is really going to go. My guess is that I'll jump around a lot. You know, you could probably tell by the title what I'm going to talk about, and I just don't even know, you know, emotionally how that's going to go for me. I will tell the story, you know, of losing my dad and just some of these details and stuff, but it's been right now just barely over 3 months, but I've sat down to record this podcast. I've had this plan to do this podcast. I kind of felt like I wanted to get back to podcasting, you know, which it's been a while, and I go in streaks. I go in streaks before this all happened, but I was already kind of in need of recording more around the time that kind of the bottom fell out on my life. And so now, before I get back to recording more and just going back to like my happy-go-lucky, hey, here's what you got to do, and et cetera, I want to just give a glimpse into my life. You know, I did a post on Instagram just about my dad dying, and it has like, I don't know, it's an insane amount of likes and comments. And I just think that first off, I like to give people an insight into my life a little bit. You know, I don't really feel like anybody should care, but I also think that my hope is that this is helpful to somebody. You know, that's always my hope with the podcast, is that it's helpful to somebody, that somebody's going to get value from it. So I'm just going to talk about how I'm doing, how I'm kind of coping with things mentally, how I'm viewing things, you know, and not to say that it's right by any means, or to say that it's that things are going good either. It's just always dynamic. And I think that's kind of one of my points, is saying nobody really knows the right answer when it comes to grief, or when it comes to stress, or when it comes to how to handle these things. So I just want to tell through my story and just say where I'm at, and just let everybody know what's going on in my life, because it's, quite frankly, I mean, it's really crazy. My last patient that was just here in person had met my dad. I had referred her to him as a dentist when she was looking for a dentist, and she's just left here and just kind of shocked. So also, too, before I start rambling, because I'm sure that's what's going to happen, the reason that I'm even doing this one, you know, right now, is I'm going to start just jumping in. I'm just going to start talking, but where was I going with that? I forget, but I don't know. This might happen more as I keep talking. I just feel like there's a lot to say. I don't know. I'm getting distracted now. So my dad died just a little bit over 3 months ago. I think I remember what I was going to say, is that the reason I'm doing this today is because I'm doing decent. You know, that's, you know, tomorrow I might not be. And I've sat down a handful of times to do this, and it just never gets done. So today's the day. And so, I mean, honestly, just even emotionally, I hope I get through it okay. I think I will, just while I'm talking into this microphone. But I don't know, it's just really devastating and sad and stuff. So I think that telling my story into a microphone might be therapeutic, but, you know, we'll just kind of see how it goes. With that being said, like I already mentioned, you know, I have no clue what I'm talking about. And what I'm saying is that neither does anybody else. You know, I have a grief counselor in my office, and I think that she would admit that her job professionally is just to listen and hear the person in front of her, hear their pain, help them cope with understanding it, and give some action steps to continue healing. So sometimes the value of that as a counselor, I'm not saying that she's not super knowledgeable and a super good expert, she is, but the value is just having an accountability partner and somebody to hear you and say, well, maybe you could try this, or have you considered trying this? That alone is very valuable. You know, nobody has your answers, but you need to keep looking for them. It's very similar to functional wellness, you know. Focus on what you can control and the whole will improve. Everyone out there has an opinion. You know, there's so many people that commented on my Instagram that are like, you're so lucky it happened quickly. And other people are like, you know, I don't know. Everybody's pain is a little bit different. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. But I'm not suggesting, everyone deals with things differently. I'm not suggesting that I have some miracle advice for anyone, which if you listen to the podcast, that I believe that that's always my take on things. You know, if you listen to other people out there, they'll say, oh, celery juice is your miracle answer. Oh, eggs are the cause of all your problems. Or, oh, strep is causing your kids, you know, defiance or OCD or whatever it is. And it's like, oh, these answers sound so certain. But do they always yield the results that we expect? The answer to that is no. So nobody knows all the answers, and certainly not me. And all we do in functional medicine is try to work mechanistically. We try to aim at the targets that we can see, and overall, people end up in a better place. The next thing that I want to talk about is just with regards to loss. You know, so many people came out and said, like, take as much time as you need. And, you know, which I think is true. You know, I don't disagree with that, but it's like, where's that balance? You know, what if I would need a lifelong vacation? You know, I how do you give yourself grace without lowering your standards? How do you rest when you have, you know, business goals? How do you take time to heal while the world keeps spinning and your bills keep coming in and you've got to provide for a family or you've got to teach your kids or all these things? You just, nobody knows. You don't really know how you're going to feel each night or the thoughts you're going to wake up having. And it's just really hard to stay disciplined and focused and happy when there's these waves of emotion. So you do need some grace. And I will say too, I'm nowhere near out of it. You know, we've had so many people comment, you know, my sisters and I, my mom will share these things. Sometimes they're discouraging because some people will say like, oh, the first 6 months you're in such a fog. And we're like, man, are we there now? It's hard to tell. Like, or some people will say, oh, it's years 2 through 5 that are the hardest. It's like, that's the most discouraging thing in the world because it's like, this is hard right now. I hope that it's not worse 2 years from now. But I think that the point is that, not to say that time heals all wounds, it doesn't, but it just, the dust settles, you know? So you give yourself some grace, but that's not limitless grace. And that's not to say that you lower your standards and that you, you know, stop doing the things that matter for your overall intentions of your life or things like that. You know, I'll say even for me, you know, I've drank more alcohol in the last 3 months than than I would have before. You know, I've eaten worse. You know, there's times where I just didn't care. I mean, gluten, pizza, gondolas, whatever. I'm not a slob. I'm not like, yeah, it's still my norm in our house that we don't do those things that much, but a lot of more birthday parties, a lot more, you know, I mean, funerals, visitations, family get-togethers, and I don't care. I don't care, and I don't think that it matters, and I don't think that anybody's going to judge me for that either. But at the same time, I know that if I start eating gluten all the time and drinking alcohol all the time, I know it's going to yield negative results for me from a Hashimoto standpoint, from an autoimmune standpoint. So my answer to that is just you've got to find your own balance. You know, another weird thing for me, I'll just say a lot of things. This is going to be like one big blah of like my story and stuff, but it's really hard. Like a lot of times I'd set my goals for the next day or whatever, like tomorrow I'm going to try to do this. And then if you wake up just completely devastated, it's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And it's really hard to know how you're going to wake up each morning. For a while, I was having this weird stuff where it was like, I was on the every other day program. If I was having a really bad day, everything was reminding me of him, everything, you know, I mean, first off, too, I'll tell the story, but like, we share an office. So I'm here every day. And my dad is my best friend. So like, everything reminds me. I played 117 holes of golf since he died. And I mean, I never golfed without him before. That's, and it's April, it's apparently it's all not even May yet. I've played 120 holes of golf already. So, I mean, everything reminds me of him. So I'm not getting into some of those things too, but sometimes I just didn't know how my day was going to be. I would make these plans and expect to, I'm going to get all this done. And the next day just have absolutely no wind in my sails. And then I was on this every other day program that if I had a really sad day, the next day would just like, for some reason, be really good. Or if I stayed up late at night, you know, crying or watching the funeral over and over again, I've probably watched it like 100 times, or the slideshow, or, you know, our eulogies or any of those things. I'm going to cry talking about it. I don't know. The next day I would wake up like pretty happy. So it was just kind of weird. And I'm intrigued by going through life experiences. So I would not recommend this to anybody, but it's just kind of interesting to go through it and now be like 3 months through it. You know, just a couple of days ago was 3 months since the funeral. So it's still so new. And if somebody's been through this loss, you know that you're like probably laughing at me like, oh my gosh, it's just starting. Again, the last person that just left here, she said, my dad, it took 6 months for him to die. And he was on morphine and he was miserable and he was in so much pain. And she said, there's so many times where I just prayed, God, can he just die? Can you just take him? And she was like, she didn't say you're so lucky. She didn't use those words, but basically that's what she said. It's like, you're lucky that it happened so fast. And I said, you know, we think we are too, but I mean, I'd love to go sit by his hospital bed right now. You know, that would be great. So, nobody knows what to do for you. Only you do. Nobody's trying to offend me. Everyone's trying to help. So, yeah, it's just kind of weird. You know, since my dad has died, I've taken several vacations. But just like that, it's hard to say if it's helped me or if it's just harder to return to reality. You know, the first vacation I took was like, gosh, I went 3 or 4 days without crying. And then coming back was just like absolutely brutal. And then since then, I've taken other vacations and, you know, other things. But I guess my point is that you just have to keep moving forward. And what works for other people, you know, I'll tell the story in a minute if I can. But what works for other people just might not work for you. And that's the same with functional medicine. That's the same with exercise, especially. There's a million programs out there, but if you don't like lifting weights, that ain't your thing. If you don't like running, that ain't your thing, but you gotta be doing something. If worshiping Jesus comforts you, sing. Sing to God. You know, pour your prayers out, by all means. If a sign, you know, like a lot of people have signs. There's a book, Signs, which is kind of the point of this. If a sign comforts you, like I have a great friend whose dad died, and we were camping one time, and a bald eagle flew over. And she said, a bald eagle is my sign for my dad. And it was just like really, you know, especially now, it's like a touching moment of like, you know, it can make you feel closer to him. Or, you know, I've got a million things that are his. I mean, half my wardrobe was hand-me-downs from him. Half the things I own were from him. I've got, you know, his old planner. I've got, I don't know, just a lot of things. And a lot of times they help. Sometimes they don't. And again, just it's interesting, you know. But the signs might be a rainbow, might be an eagle. And if that helps you, comforts you, look for them. Another one that's, again, the balance is like old pictures. If I look at old pictures all the time, I don't think that that'd be a healthy thing for me. I'd be bummed all the time. But as long as you keep healing and moving forward, you're not wallowing in it. I also love all my old pictures of him, with him. You know, you can imagine I've got a pretty tight-knit family. We're all really close. We send these pictures all the time. And I don't know that they don't always help, you know, they don't always help me. They don't always help my sisters. I'm sure there's times when they come in a group text or whatever, that's just like, man, this is the last thing that I needed right now. You know, sometimes I'll be going all good. Everything's all good. I'm just kind of out of sight, out of mind, focused on my something else, you know, and somebody sends a picture or they send a text about how bad they're doing this week. And like my only role, I'm not complaining. My role is to be there for them and to see, you know, what can I do or how can I be of value if there is anything. Otherwise, sometimes me being of value is just keep my mouth shut. But I would just say that doing your best and being non-apologetic for it is the goal. And, you know, if it's a friend, you know, my good buddy, who he stood in my wedding, I stood in his wedding. His mom died, you know, just like a month before me. And like, first off, too, we're guys. There's not a lot that we're going to say, like, here's what you could do for me, buddy. Every time I ask him, it's like, hey, how are you doing? I'm fine. You know, I'm fine. We're all fine. But it's just like, every time somebody asks me that, I answer, I'm fine. But I definitely, definitely remember everybody who's asked me. I know who's asked me. I know who hasn't asked me. And sometimes the people who haven't asked me, those are louder than the people who have. You know what I mean? And there's a fine line again, whereas my mom had friends where at first they were reached out 5 times a day. And it was a little bit excessive. But I don't think she was complaining. It's all out of love. And so I think that that's important to know, whether you're the one suffering or you're the one trying to help, there is no right answer. And so if somebody's trying to help you, they're just trying to do their best. And if you're trying to help somebody else, you're just trying to help them in your best. And as long as you do that, that's great. But the point is that as long as you keep healing and moving forward and not wallowing in it, it's important to have all these memories, to have all these touches, to have all these things that you know. I don't think it's good to sweep it under the rug and just disregard it or ignore it or act like it's not happening or be in denial or anything like that. I don't think it's good to, you know, compartmentalize the memories or anything like that. I think it's good to relive them. I think it's good to remember all the good times. I think it's good to, you know, live through the pain and the sadness and just recognize it and just, you know, accept it and just cry through it. But some things are obviously just not good for your brain, like isolation or denial or suppression or anything else that people, you know, tend to reach for, like sex, drugs, alcohol, food, addictions, you know, gambling, whatever else brings them the short-term pleasure. So obviously be careful. I'm not saying you can't seek pleasure. I'm not saying you can't go out and have fun and things. Sometimes that's great. Like, for me, again, one of the things at the beginning was like going out with my friends and just going to do stuff or go skiing, because it was just like, guess what we weren't talking about? We weren't talking about my dead dad. Yeah. So as I was writing the script, you know, this is actually like a couple weeks ago, because I've been trying to record this podcast for a while, but I was writing the script and I saw this guy that I know. He's a friend of my parents, and he was in our waiting room in our office, and he'd been in a sauna. He was here in my office. And anyway, I don't want to stare too much because, you know, anybody that hears this might know who he is, but I just was so bummed when I saw him, but his son died in an accident. And basically the gist of the story is, and I don't remember all the details, the dad is the one that told me the story before, but his son died, he wasn't wearing a helmet, and he had asked his dad before they went out, do I need a helmet? And his dad told him no. And it's like, can you imagine for that dad? Like, I don't think that, you know, my pain is not more than anybody else's pain. It's not less than anybody else's pain either, but your pain is your pain, and it's hard to compare it to somebody else's. I would say the same thing with functional medicine. Your mold toxicity is different than somebody else's mold toxicity. Your kid's pandas is different than somebody else's kid's pandas. You might get some value from hearing about what other people have done. You might get some value in learning from an expert or reading a book about pandas or about mold toxicity or about autoimmune disease or whatever else it is. But that's kind of the point of, even in my office, is in a functional medicine space, every case is unique and different. Yeah, there's some similarities, like you can't have deficiencies of things like vitamin D or omegas or vitamins, minerals, nutrients, magnesium, zinc, you know, fill in the blank. You can't have toxicities. You can't have an overload of mercury. You can't have an overload of mold toxins. You can't have an overload of sugar. You can't have gut dysbiosis. These things are generally true for every single human that walks. But does that mean it's true for you at all times? No. And there's a million different degrees of you know, shades of gray or whatever it is. There's all so much customization that goes into this. And I'd say the same thing is with trauma and loss and grief. So I think that the point of today's podcast is just to get my story out, to give you a glimpse of my life, some of the things I've been dealing with, and hopefully by telling you that story, I just give you some ideas, some insight, or some value into how you're dealing with your situations. It was amazing, the outpouring of people on my Instagram post. You know, I didn't post about this much. I haven't been that active in social media, and I wasn't that active beforehand. But it was amazing how many people posted and said, same thing happened to me. Same thing happened to me. Same thing happened to me. And honestly, that made me feel, you know, I don't know if loved is the word, but like, you know, it made me feel heard and it made me feel not alone. You know, obviously I've got my sisters and I've got my family and we're all going through this tragic thing, but like, man, oh man, it just made me think how many other people are out there suffering. And you know, we all have dads and they all die, you know, and not everybody has a dad, of course. Another just thing right when this happened was like, you know, cause you think like poor, pitiful me, like why did my dad have to die? But my best friend, one of my best friends, his dad died when he was in second grade. He had a heart attack on the roof and fell off and died. And like, he never had a dad. You know what I mean? Like, how lucky am I that I even got to have one, you know? So here's some of the takeaways before I tell the story. Stress is really hard on the body, right? So that's kind of the point from an autoimmune perspective, that stress is really hard on the body. So are marathons. You know, so that doesn't mean you can't run them, but you can't run them every day. But you just have to recognize that and you have to recover appropriately or you will cause damage. So that's kind of my thing right now is like damage control, you know, just getting through the emotional stress and grief, but then now the physical and now just getting feeling motivated to get back in the gym and get back on, you know, my habits and lifestyle things, and which were not perfect in the first place, but they were not good for a few months there. And so just getting back on that, especially the exercise and, you know, I continue to sauna and I continue to take supplements and stuff, but diet and exercise is really the main thing. So I recognize that and I'm trying to recover appropriately so that it doesn't cause any damage. Then the next thing is I sympathize with people who have had loved ones with long drawn out struggles, like how brutal. I also sympathize with people who experience sudden loss, like a heart attack or a car wreck. Neither pain is less than the other, but I will say that long, drawn-out struggles followed by the loved one still dying is probably worse. You know, I think that this could have been worse, but it's probably more damaging on the body, I should say. It's probably more damaging on the body because it's chronic stress followed by an incredible loss, but it's just chronic. It was wears you down. So I do think that is worse. The next big picture takeaway is that stress impacts the brain, you know, and the adrenals and all the things, but you know, even the adrenals are famous for stress, but like the brain controls the adrenals, the hypothalamus, the pituitary, the sympathetic nervous system. You know, cortisol is anti-inflammatory and cortisol helps balance adrenaline. I feel like cortisol gets demonized, but it just damages the stress system. So you just have to be aware of that and just know that as that stress system becomes more dysregulated, it leaves you prone to more things like sleep disturbances, energy imbalances, inflammatory conditions, and just know that that's stress. And then you have to learn how to push the brakes on stress. So whether that's deep breathing, whether that's vagus nerve stimulation, whether that's adaptogenic herbs and different supplements or adrenal supports or whatever else, whether that's having a practice of gratitude, of prayer, or just of faith. I mean, that's been a cornerstone of this whole experience for all of us, is that, I mean, I don't even know how we could go through it without a foundation like that of, you know, just, we're a faith-based family. I would say that, you know, some of them are more committed than I am, even I would say, but it's like we're all have that as a general foundation, and you know, prayer and just gratitude, all those things. During this time, sleep becomes more important. So like, I have not guilted myself about what time I'm waking up in the morning. It's like, whatever. But eventually, I'm not going to do that for years. Even right now, it's like, okay, I'm starting to feel a little lazy. I'm starting to feel a little less productive. So, I'm talking in the last month, I've been back on, you know, just getting up early, exercising, all those things. I have, like I said, I took my kids skiing out west, which is, you know, stressful. That was less than a month after he died. Then I went on a heli skiing trip, which is awesome. I wanted to spread his ashes. I think the TSA confiscated my ashes out of my travel case. I think they thought I was traveling with a mysterious white powder, and I think I lost them. But and then we went to Disney World with all of my family. You know, there's supposed to be 18 of us. There was 17 of us, but all the grandkids, and that was a lot of tears, a lot of crying, a lot of sadness. But the point is that vacations could sometimes be good. They could sometimes be bad, but whatever it is, You have to balance that. Sleep becomes more important. Saying no to stuff becomes more important. The biggest problem, I'd say, is that it's easy to say yes to bad food. It's easy to say yes to too much alcohol. You know, there was times, especially even in the hospital and stuff, where I'd come home and I'd have a drink or have a beer and I'd be in a better mood, like immediately. That's hard to say no to. And it's, you know, it's very true. I mean, it's 100% true. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but it's like within 30 minutes, it's like, oh, I can at least smile and chuckle and laugh and put something funny on or whatever. So it's really easy to slide into those things. And I would just say I've definitely struggled with that a lot. It's just easy to float through life during this time. And I've struggled with that. And that's just for me, especially, that's not my norm. It's probably a little bit below my standards of, like, you know, eventually just like, okay, I got to get back on to some things with visioneering or practice building or, you know, shaping the direction that my life is headed and stuff like that. But I don't want anybody to think that just because I come out here and chuckle and stuff, I don't want anybody to think it's been easy. I don't think anybody thinks that, but it's been, you know, horrible. And then you have to do good things for your brain. So like I said, vacation, skiing, for me, like that's the healthiest thing for my brain. Skiing is by far the healthiest thing for my brain. It's when I feel the happiest. It's when I feel the healthiest. Skiing with my kids especially, that's like the best of both worlds. Laughter is healing. Exercise is healing. Journaling is healing. Nature is healing. I mean these things as absolutes. Now, is that your preferred? Maybe not. You got to find out what you like. These are absolutes. Nature is healing. Looking at the infinite complexities of nature, being outside, breathing clean air, being grounded. I mean, that's something that I've held really high in my values for a long time. But especially during this time, I cannot wait for camping. We were supposed to go two nights ago, and it was just the low was 35. We pulled the plug on it, but we're going to go really soon. I cannot wait for that. So that stuff just becomes more important. If you're putting more wear on your body, you need more recovery. And that's just, again, a pretty easy concept. Counseling is healing. You know, you need to talk it out. Whether it's grief, whether it's EMDR, whether it's trauma. Now that might, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a counselor, but that might come down the road of like doing some trauma work or peeling back the layers. At first, it might just be, I need somebody to talk to. I need a sounding board. Now, for me, I do not enjoy talk. You know, people want to go to lunch with me or coffee with me. I'm like, I say yes, you know. So if anybody's out there that's asked me, I mean, I never say no, but Like, what are we gonna talk about how we miss him? Like, it's horrible for me. I do not enjoy it. It's not valuable for me, but people want to check in on me, and so I want to respect that and stuff. But like, I don't really like, even the hard part too is like, we get together as a family a lot. Like, it's not that pleasant to me, even to hang out with my mom or my sisters or my grandma. It's like there's this, just this underlying, like, just devastation at all, this unspoken devastation at all times. And I'd honestly, like, I feel a little better hanging with my friends or people that are not family members. It's just like, I don't know, it feels just like it did a year ago. But I think both are really, really helpful. So again, I'm rambling now, but you just want to minimize the damage that's done. Then you can do any higher level, deeper dive, functional medicine stuff. You know, if you've listened to this podcast or if you're a follower of this, I mean, I always want to give value, but I'm also a big fan of action steps, action steps, action steps, action steps. And I'm also a big fan of, like, I'm going to lay out 20 action steps and let you pick which 5 work best for you instead of saying this is the roadmap that you need to follow. But, you know, looking at your gut health, looking at your labs, obviously, vitamin D, omegas, all the things that are in every podcast episode about this, doing things like neurofeedback, doing things like limbic system retraining, hormone support, all those things, just really helpful no matter what. So, yeah. So let me tell you the story, you know, and if you're curious, keep listening. If you're not, don't, but I don't even know if I'll be able to get through this. I'll probably go quick. I might have to take some pauses, but I'll give you the gist of it. So on December 18th, 2023, my life was completely normal. It was a Monday, and my dad and I worked in our shared office. I knew that he had had some back pain. I'm a chiropractor. So I knew he'd had some back pain, and I'd been adjusting him. And this happens all the time. I mean, he throws his back out. He's a golfer. We'll fix it. It's better. Then we won't need to do anything for 6 months, and then we'll adjust him again. And this happens for both of my parents and for, I don't know, everybody. My dad is 68. Actually, he just turned 68. So let me backtrack. This was December 18th. November 26th, the year that year, was his birthday. And he turned 68. I mean this literally, you know, consider who I am and what I do. I mean this 100% literally. As his doctor, he was the healthiest person that I know. That was my number one goal. Like, he's my dad. So it's up to him if he wants to eat gluten free or take supplements and stuff like that. But it's like, as far as if he wanted my help, my goal is like, I want this dude to be around forever. Last weekend, my dad lost his dad. So up until that point, I still had both of my grandfathers. One was, what was he when he died? Maybe 92, I think. My other one's about to turn 97, still alive. And honestly, going downhill pretty quickly right now. But up until a year ago, I still had both of my grandpas. So that's kind of the vision that was set for me. It was like, yeah, my dad's going to make it till 90, and he makes better lifestyle action steps, better lifestyle decisions than these guys. He might be around longer than that. And I legitimately thought that, meaning like his health, his labs. We look, I mean, he's my dad ate, wouldn't say gluten-free, that'd be a stretch. But he'd order a burger with no bun. He intermittent fasted. He would do 24-hour fasts once a week during certain stretches of his life. Now, he'd also, you know, didn't mind M&Ms and things like that. I mean, he wasn't crazy about them, but at a basketball game, he might get M&Ms and munch on them or things like that. But he was legitimately, on paper and in person, I'm not exaggerating when I say he was the healthiest 68-year-old that I knew. He was, you know, skinny and had the look of being healthy, but also, as we all know, sometimes that could be misleading. But even on labs, like, as far as how he was aging, I thought everything was going perfectly smooth. That's again why this was, you know, just devastating. So December 18th, he's got this back pain, blah, blah, blah. It's getting worse. I know it's bothering him. December 19th, he comes in, and I thought he was coming in for an adjustment. And he says, I got to talk to you in your office. He says, I have metastatic bone cancer. So the night before, his back pain had gotten so bad that he went to the ER, and they did a CT scan to see his spine, and they could see that he had metastasis all throughout his spine. And all it says in the RAD reports was, I'm very familiar with CT reports and RAD reports, it said widespread bony metastasis of the spine and pelvis. So he told me that on Tuesday, it was 12 o'clock. I canceled the rest of my day. First off, I'll tell you too, I canceled this one guy. And then we rescheduled him. I had to cancel him twice. He's the only person throughout this whole time. He's the only person that I had to cancel twice. When I finally saw him for our visit, I said, hey, man, I'm so sorry. And he said, I lost my dad in 10 weeks. It's okay. So he was, you know, just very understanding and imaginably sympathetic, you know. So, but December 19th, he came in and told me that. And honestly, that's kind of where the whole thing began. But it's like, okay, so Google metastatic bone cancer. It's like the average life expectancy is 6 to 9 months. So at that time, I'm devastated, coming to grips with the fact that my dad might not make it a whole nother year. And, you know, he died 3 weeks later. But we're devastated and just thinking like, oh my gosh, metastatic bone cancer. We got to get in. We got to find the primer. We got to, you know, treat it. My dad is also very anti-chemo and radiation. Not very, but he was not very pro either. But at the time, he's in pain. It was like, we would have taken any treatment. And it was just urgent. You know, radiation is the most urgent thing for stopping spread of bone lesions and the pain, especially. He was in intense pain. And I'll get to that in a second. But that was December 19th. He was told, yeah, you have metastatic bone cancer. They told him, you know, they're very horrible bedside manners, like, the 2 a.m. ER docs, which aren't exactly the A squad usually. And they were just like, yeah, you have metastatic bone cancer. You're going to come in the day after Christmas to the suspicion of cancer clinic, and we're going to start looking for where it's from. Go home, have a good night, see you. And he was like, what? You know, jaw on the floor, like in shock. And so then anyway, on Tuesday, he came and told me that night. And he was like, I'm not going to tell the girls. I was like, dude, you got to tell him. He's like, I'm going to wait till after Christmas. So you got to tell him. There's no way. There's no way we can get through this without you telling them. I can't keep this a secret. If you don't tell them, I'm going to tell them. That night, we went to a Christmas program at a church locally. They do an awesome Christmas program. And like, I did not want to go because I was just, I mean, I was devastated. I canceled my day. I was bawling my eyes out. But my dad really wanted to go. He was in a lot of pain, but he wanted to see, he just loved, you know, the smiles on the kids' faces when they saw this whole, you know, it's a whole play and like, you know, this little drummer boys come down from the ceiling and it's just like, it's a huge operation. It's really cool. But the kids love it. And he was just like, I want to go for this. So I said, okay, I'll go, you know, and this was a Tuesday again. So then nobody knows at that time. I was the only one that knew that night. But then the next day, told his mom and stuff. And we're just devastated. I remember one day, you know, during this time when he was still at home, you know, he was only home for the next 6 days. But I remember one day just going over to his house and I just said, I just want to hang out with you. And we just kind of sat there and, you know, watched golf on TV or, you know, something like that. But it's just like, man, I might only have you for another 9 months. What a joke. Just wanted to hang out with him. So, sorry, I'm trying to keep my stuff together. So then, Christmas Eve was a Monday, right? Yeah, Christmas Eve was a Monday. Or was it Christmas night? No, excuse me, it was Christmas night. And that was his, was that right? Crap, now I'm forgetting. No, it was Christmas Eve. Excuse me. We all got together Christmas Eve. No, that is right. Jeez Louise. It was Christmas night was his last night at home. Christmas night, the 25th, was a Monday. And then the next morning he was supposed to go to the suspicion of cancer for his appointment. He never made it to that appointment. He was in such bad pain that we had to call the ambulance. Even the night of Christmas, it was just pretty brutal. My brother-in-law's helped carry him down the stairs, which this is my like strong, healthy, 2 weeks ago, completely fine, 3 days ago, completely fine, dad. And they said it was really brutal to watch because he was in such bad pain they couldn't get him down the stairs. He sat there all night. He smiled. He had a great time while we opened presents and things like that. But at one point, he just said, I got to go up to the bed. So we helped him up. I went up with him and sat up in his bed with him most of the night during Christmas while we watched the Bears game. You know, the Bears were playing. So we're just, and that's not that abnormal. You know, we're just hanging out like we normally do and watching the Bears game. We're just in his bed and he's in a lot of pain, but it wasn't like he wasn't like groaning or writhing in pain or something, but just like movements and stuff like that. But the next day he goes to the hospital. And I don't know, maybe this is where we make the long story short, but like, I don't know, it just kind of went downhill. To me, this is where things get kind of interesting and weird because I'm, you know, I'm not like a doctor or like a, I don't know, oncologist or, you know, our friend who's a family friend who's a neurosurgeon was chiming in his two cents and things like that. And it's just like, that's not my niche, but I'm an expert on labs and I was watching his labs. Some of his labs were crazy, like really, really bad, even to the point where, you know, when he was, you know, closer to his deathbed where I could tell that they were visibly, that they were shaking some of the docs. They were like, WTF, like, I'm talking like numbers that I just can't even describe to you on a podcast because if you don't know labs, they're just like hard to fathom. Like if normal's below 300, his were like 11,000. Or if a normal LDH, you know, is 150, his was 2,600. And his platelets were like, got down into the 20s and just like, all these, they call them in the lab world, they call them ominous markers. And there were these ominous markers that I was just watching. And something was just really, really wrong. And they're on these, all these meds just to manage the pain. Because it just, you know, it was unmanageable. And honestly, I would say that the meds probably sped up his demise, for sure. But they were necessary, too. But then, anyway, one day, I don't remember the details of this date-wise, or I'm not going to get into it, but one day, I will tell this. My sister had a trip to Mexico planned. Already paid for, already planned, already booked, and things like that. And everybody said at one point, they said, nothing looks... I forget if ominous was the word they used, but they said, nothing looks immediate. Go ahead, have a trip. You're fine. Nothing's going to happen while you're gone. Go ahead, have a good time, and he'll still be here when you get back. They left after their first day. They stayed in Mexico for 36 hours. And that first day, he had his bone biopsy. For us, we were all waiting. First off, you know, in the hospital, it takes freaking forever. It's like his bone biopsy is scheduled for 4 days from now. It's like he's dying and in pain. Like we want to know what's going on. We want to know the primary. We want to know the source. We want to get treatment started, all these things. That ain't how it works, you know, and there's no speeding it up in the hospital process. It's like this is the next available appointment, things like that. So we were all banking on this bone biopsy to be like, find the source, find the answer, find the primary. Something happened in his bone biopsy where he never came back. And I don't mean that literally, but like it was maybe another week after that. But his feet started turning blue. He started having vascular issues at that point. And that's kind of when it all started going downhill. Then January 4th, I want to say, maybe 5th. And through this, you know, my birthday was during that time. You know, we went and saw my dad in the hospital and then went out and celebrated my birthday with a bunch of people and he wasn't there. And like, I don't know. He would have been there. We went to a Bradley game. Hang on. We went to a Bradley game, which it doesn't really matter for the sake of this podcast, but like we had season tickets to Bradley growing up. I mean, I've been to a million Bradley games with my dad. He would have never missed it. And so it was just kind of weird. But anyway, then January 5th or so, things started getting worse. It's when my sister was gone and he had to go to the ICU. Labs kept getting worse. They had to give him oxygen and breathing treatments to try to keep his oxygen up. His lungs were affected. And I don't know. I mean, that's when like there was not many glimmers of hope. So in the meantime, too, in the middle of this, I went on a trip. I went to Devil's Head to ski, which I told in my eulogy. It was like my dad taught me about sex at Devil's Head. He taught me about the birds and the bees and where kids come from. We're on a father-son ski trip, me and him, at this place in Wisconsin called Devil's Head, which I go to all the time and ski at. But honestly, those 4 days when I was at Devil's Head were like the most unremarkable days of his hospital stay. Like really nothing changed. I'm not exaggerating. Devil's Head has horrible phone service. I checked his My Charts. I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would check him in the middle of the night. I would check him the first thing when I woke up, and I'd probably check him 50 times a day because they're always adding new labs, and that was kind of my role. And not like I was good at it, but it's like you just like want something to do and want to be involved and want to play, have some value. So like I was and it also keeps you distracted. It gives you something to do rather than think about the what ifs. But like I was researching. I mean, I read so many freaking papers on these different types of cancers, and then be like, hey, the prostate's now the highest probability because of this, this, and this, but it could still be leukemia or myeloma or things like that, multiple myeloma. And just ruling in and out all the, okay, he's got high this and high that, so it could be this, but it's probably not, you know, it's probably not lymphoma because these aren't elevated, and just like, just kind of guessing and not really trying to solve it. I was never trying to claim like I knew, but it's just that's kind of what my brain did to feel like I was doing something. You know, if there's a problem, you just want to feel like you're not ignoring it. You want to feel like you're doing something. But things have been kind of smooth for all things considered up until January 4th or so. And then January 5th, he went into the ICU. And I mean, honestly, from there, it was just kind of downhill. And then the last thing was like, I don't know. At this time, too, I'm trying to get back to work and stuff. So this is on a Sunday. I had, you know, patients scheduled on Monday and was planning on working. But everything was very up in the air at this point. I'd canceled a lot of stuff. I did cancel a lot through December and January and all the things. But they said they needed to have a family meeting with us all at 2:00. And you might understand the kind of where this is going, where they, I don't know, they're it was garbage. I mean, they're all sympathetic and great people and heartfelt and things like that, but they're like, you know, somebody's in there who's a mental health professional. So she's trying to ask us a lot of questions, like, yeah, like, you know, just trying to be sympathetic and stuff, but we're just like, can you just stop talking to us and just get to the point? And like, I don't know, I'm probably less appreciative than everybody else in my family, but it was just like, you kind of read the writing on the wall. This was like the pull the plug meeting. Honestly, this meeting wasn't the worst thing I've been through, but it just, you know, really, really sucked where they just kind of said like, there's nothing more we can do. Here's what we do for these people is we take them off of all their supportive treatments and we just start ramping up morphine so that as they go down, they're just in less pain and less miserable. So we said, yeah. I mean, we didn't really have a choice. We said, yeah, okay. And so we agreed to do that. And then we, you know, called people who wanted to see him one last time. we spent that last night, you know, doing that, saying goodbyes, and his closest friends came. They let us like kind of expand our ICU room to kind of like a family room. The hospital was so great. They were so great, and the nurses were so great. And, you know, I don't know. I have to believe that everybody did everything that they could. I think that the system is just a mess, but it's kind of like, you know, the airline system. It's like, it's not easy to move thousands of people around today. It's not easy to, you know, treat the healthcare of, you know, 350 million people in the U.S. So I know there's flaws, and I'm, of course, have very strong opinions about different, you know, interventions and things like that. But everybody's doing the best that they can. They did a great job. And then that night, you know, it was Monday night, and I stayed in the hospital room with my mom, just me and her and my dad. And at 1:30 in the morning, she said, "Tay, he's gone." And then, honestly, that was kind of it. We kind of, for the next like hour, kind of packed our stuff up, and then we went home. It was like, it was a snowstorm. And it was, I mean, it just had to be the weirdest night of my life. You know, I'd get home at 4 in the morning, with a bunch of stuff, my dad's shoes. You know, I sleep every night on the pillow that he died on. And I don't know, just that's it. Then the funeral wasn't for 10 more days. And here we are now, I guess. So it's 3 months ago. That's the story. I don't really even know why I'm telling it on the podcast. I mean, I hope that it serves, you know, some value for people, or that's helpful for people. I think even for my own family, that they'll probably listen to it and cry. You know, this is, to me, this is more therapeutic to say it into a microphone than it is to like go out to coffee with somebody and say, "How you doing, Taylor?" Like, I don't know. What are you going to pep talk me? That serves zero value to me at all. And in fact, it might have negative value. It takes away from my purpose and my drive and my motivation and all those things. I understand that people have my best interests at heart and things like that, but this is just kind of where we're at today. So I am, you know, happy to say this. Honestly, there's no way I would have been able to get through this a little while ago. I was going to say earlier too, like, I don't know at what part, but like I watched the funeral, you know, I don't know, like a week ago, let's say. And I was like, wow, I barely cried. Like, you know, I probably cried like 4 times, but it's the pain is lessening. And you know, I think that's kind of the point, is that like, a lot of people have it worse than me. A lot of people have had more hardships, but you kind of get through them. I mean, it 100% is part of life. I talked in my eulogy, which is also, I don't know if anybody cares, but it is available online if you want to watch it or hear more about my dad. It's amazing. Also, too, if anybody that's still chimed in, his visitation was supposed to go from 4 to 7, and it went from 3:45 to 9:45 at night. We stood there for 6 hours. Many people had to leave. Many people had to wait for 3 hours. They were sitting people in sections, and they were having people come through in entire sections. So I just say that to say that that's just a testament of who my dad was and the people that he knew and the influence that he had. And he was nothing special, and he would agree to that. He was just always the exact same. And I hope that I'm, you know, anything like him in any way. But I don't know where I was going with that, but that's just kind of where we're at right now. So anyway, wanted to get that out. Oh yeah, maybe I was talking about the funeral and how I got through it without even crying, but a few weeks ago, that wouldn't even be possible. So, and even today, you know, I'm going to wrap this up and go home and, you know, hug my kids and play with them. And I'm still going to be heartbroken and devastated and destroyed, but I don't know. You live. The show must go on. You got to keep going. Now I remember where I was going with this. So sorry to jump around. I'll wrap it up here in a sec. In my eulogy,
I talked about the greatest loss in my dad's life. My dad had this basketball game in high school where his team was like the number two team in the state, and they were really good, and they were playing this other team in Peoria, and they were supposed to win, blah, blah, blah. The other team was really good too. But long story short is they beat him by one in overtime or something like that. I think my dad hit a buzzer beater to send it to overtime. Then they beat him in overtime. And I talk about it in my eulogy. I said, I think that was the greatest loss that he ever experienced until his dad died. I said, I don't think he ever got over it, but he taught me that you don't have to get over your losses. Losses happen, but you can't wallow in it. You got to move forward. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I know I'm not even done with losses. I got other people in my life that got to die at some point, or, you know, business things. I mean, losses happen, but you don't expect them. You push through them. You get stronger from them. You think, where can I, you know, if somebody else is going through one, how can I help with this, or where can I be of value for this? But that's just kind of where I'm at, getting through this kind of darker part of my life. And also for it being the darkest, most devastating, just most gut-wrenching thing I've ever experienced, it's also been beautiful to see my kids, my family, my community, the impact that he had, and just all those things. And so you can choose to look at the clouds, or you can choose to look at the sun, and I would choose that every single time. So anyway, I try to keep these podcasts under an hour. I'm right at an hour. I'm probably just rambling. But that's kind of where I'm at. I'm yet to have, you know, the first Father's Day. You know, we go golfing on Father's Day. I went to Wrigley Field yesterday, and, you know, just all these little things. Like, I've done everything with him my entire life. He's my best friend. He literally worked here with Julie and I every single day. Now we're trying to figure out his dental practice and all the equipment and the building and all these things. It's just drama, 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 especially for my mama. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at. And you know what? We're going to be fine. So I love you to everybody that listened to this. I hope it wasn't just too rambly. I hope there was some valuable nuggets in there. And, you know, I just pray for everybody and hope for everybody when they're going through pain too. And it just makes me, I don't know, just have a different level of empathy. You know, sympathy and empathy, it gives me a different level of empathy for people more than anything. So, with that being said, I do have some other podcasts coming up. I'm going to record one about kids and kids' health, which, you know, should be cool, and just talk about general kids as one that's been on my radar for a while. I've also got, you know, some other things coming down the pipeline, like a histamine online program and a pandas, maybe do a pandas online program. So we got some cool stuff. So anyway, that's kind of my story, and stress, grief, and how I'm doing 3 months after losing my old man. So, thanks. Talk to you guys next time.